Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Don't touch that dial. You're tuned in to the Dread Podcast Network.
Welcome to Development Hell. For every horror movie that hits VOD, countless others end up DOA. Development Hell is the podcast dedicated to unearthing these cursed horror productions. We're going to find out what went wrong, and then decide if these titles still stand a shot at the green light. I am your host, Josh Korngut. I am the managing editor of Dread Central. I am also a filmmaker in Toronto, Canada. This podcast is a proud member of the Dread Podcast Network. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to a brand new episode of Development Hell. It is our favorite time of year over at Development Hell. That's right, it's October, which means it's officially spooky season, which basically means it's 31 days of Halloween. And, you know, I think it was really important for us to celebrate that and to observe that properly this year, because last year we didn't, and it felt wrong, and it didn't feel right. Now, you might remember 2 years ago, the debut of our first miniseries, Halloween is Canceled, where we uncovered, I think, 5 different unmade Halloween sequels, and you all loved it, I loved it, and so now it's time for us to do a sequel series. So welcome to the very first episode of Halloween is Canceled. So what are we doing? We're doing the same thing. We're going to be unearthing about 5 different unmade Michael Myers movies, the more outrageous, the better, and we're going to be doing so every Tuesday of the month for October, just so you could feel spooky, just so you can get into, you know, the pumpkin spice of it all. And I just want to be a part of that for you guys. You know, I want to be a part of your season. Okay, so we're going to get right into it, because why not? The very first topic today is Halloween 2. Yes, Halloween 2 exists. Actually, Halloween 2 exists 3 times, because there was Halloween 2, and then there was Halloween 2 of Rob Zombie, then there was Halloween 2 of David Gordon Green. Today, we're talking about the alternative universe of Halloween 2, which was going to be in place of the 1981 original that we got with Jamie Lee Curtis. So John Carpenter and Deborah Hill were actually thinking of going in a couple of different directions for the Michael Myers first sequel. And the one that I'm most interested in is the one that takes place in a high-rise apartment complex. So we're going to be calling this episode Halloween High-Rise, because that sounds kind of cool. Okay, so the most exciting part of today's episode, I would say, is our very, very wonderful, knowledgeable, powerful returning guest judge, Jules Bruin. Now, you may remember Jules Bruin from being on a number of episodes, including our Jeepers Creepers Unseen miniseries, Jaws 3 People Zero, and The Crooked Man. Jules, how's it going?
What an intro. Thank you so much. Happy spooky season to you.
So happy spooky season to you, too. Have you begun the observations of spooks?
I have. I yesterday wore my Halloween leggings. I'm fully ready. I'm going to buy a pumpkin probably this evening and
get it going.
I know you already have your pumpkins.
I have some pumpkins, yeah.
They are beautiful. So you beat me.
But wow, yeah. I've beaten you once and again and for all. You know, you're very interesting in terms of your pedigree and how it relates to what we talk about sometimes. Who are you? What do you do? What's your whole deal?
Yeah, so I am a therapist, I guess. I'm a trauma-informed counselor based in Toronto. I specialize in trauma, mental health. I mean, I've always loved Halloween, and Josh is my best friend, so I've been around horror for a very long time, but I kind of come in with a therapy lens whenever I watch horror, which I know sometimes drives Josh crazy.
But I love it.
I'm like, that's so traumatic, and he's like, we're watching a freaking slasher movie, but anyway, yeah.
So true. You're like, yeah. Think of the long-term implications of like the kid that saw it happen three blocks away, and I'm like,
I do. I'm like, that kids. Poor woman on the phone.
Yeah, that was true. I think if we were watching Halloween 2 and like some girl was hearing her friend die on the phone, and she's like, that woman on the phone is not going to be okay. And I was like, I don't think she's real.
I was like,
you're not worried about the girl that just got her throat slit up.
Worried about everything.
But yeah, we're having Jules back, A, because we love her, but B, because Jules, unlike most people in this world, is a true Halloween head. And I don't just mean the Halloween franchise, which she does love.
I do.
But I'm talking about Halloween the season.
Yeah, so anything Halloween related, I think I love to devour, and it fills my heart with love, happiness.
Yum, yum, yum. The references for information for today's episode coming from different Fangoria releases, and we'll talk a little bit more about that down the line. And Jules, I know you love the Michael Myers Halloween franchise. Mm-hmm. What makes it special to you?
I mean, it's just so Halloween-ish. Also, the first film is just perfect in it, other than it's like beautiful, scary, creepy, you know, it's tense, it's all these things. And I think everyone's always trying to get there. A lot of the Halloween franchises since are so silly, and that makes them amazing and easy to watch, fun and campy. I know we always debate what camp is, but, you know, I think no one could debate. Yeah, this franchise is just
one of my favorite parts of my job here at Dread Central is sometimes I get to see movies ahead of time. And I was lucky with both Halloween Kills and Halloween Ends to get, you know, into early screenings, and I brought Jules with me every time.
Yep.
Which I will say made them more you know, enjoyable.
I scream a lot in theaters, so I, you know, I get into it, so I, there was a lot of me screaming.
Yeah, but I mean, not so much in Halloween Ends, but we don't need to go there.
Oof, what a disappointment.
It's Halloween polarizing, Jules. Be careful. People might say, ah, la, la, la.
But yeah. I loved Halloween Kills.
I know, me too.
I loved that one. Anyway.
People hate it, though, you know?
It's so weird. They're wrong.
It's a fickle, fickle kingdom. It's a fickle kingdom.
I don't want to cause animosity at the beginning of this podcast, so let's...
Wow. All right, well, Jules, do you think I could give us a little bit of a seminar on the original Halloween Part 2?
Yes, please.
Halloween 2 was actually made, of course, after the success of the original 1978 Halloween film directed by John Carpenter. So come 1981, we got another installment starring Michael Myers, this time not directed by John Carpenter, but directed by Rick Rosenthal. And this is the first time this man ever actually directed a film on his own. The movie itself, though, was in fact written and produced by both John Carpenter and Deborah Hill, who was also so important to the original film and making the franchise what it is that we have today. Halloween 2 also stars Jamie Lee Curtis and Donald Pleasance, reprising their roles from the first film. And it starts off immediately where the first film ends, as Michael sort of continues his havoc through Haddonfield. And Laurie Strode is sort of taken directly to the hospital to sort of address her wounds and her trauma and all that. No one believes her, but she's certain Michael is going to follow her there. And spoiler alert, yes, he does. And there is mayhem and not any prosperity in this hospital. This movie, I guess, kind of got mixed reviews on release, and I still actually think in terms of fan response, there is a mixed reviews, although I really like it myself. It made a lot of money. It made about $25 million just on this side of the pond, which of course led it to spawning a bunch of other sequels, including Halloween 3 Season of the Witch, which I believe it was only released about 1 year later. But this story itself was followed by Halloween 4, or The Return of Michael Myers, and it took until 1988 for that to come out. So I would say, okay, do you think I did a good job in terms of like sort of summarizing what's going on in the world of Halloween?
Yeah, totally.
I love that. What was our first experiences with Halloween 2?
You always told me it was your favorite. I was really pumped for it. I love it. I love Dr. Loomis. So I love that he's so in this movie.
Yeah.
There's nothing I like more than a therapist that can be a bad therapist. So it's so fun for me to watch.
Oh, was he a bad therapist?
I don't know. I don't think he's great. No, he's like, I was obsessed with him and now I think he's evil. I'm like, I don't know if that's the boundaries there, but you know.
That's not how you would approach Michael Myers if he was your client.
You know, it's bad though. I'd probably be like, he's great. There's good in everyone. So maybe I'm the problem too. But fun. I love it all being in one. I mean, I even think the first movie, it all being in a small town is scary, and there's something really small and, you know, cramped about that. And then to go to a hostel, it's even smaller. It's even like more tense.
Yes.
I love that. I love that.
Yeah, the contained element, you know, both these movies, but especially part two, is really fun, and it really like brings on the challenge for the filmmakers to like make it work in a tight space. And I don't know, I think that that can really work. I also love the hospital setting, because I mean, there's really nothing scarier than a hospital in so many ways, and I think we all have some kind of relationship, a negative relationship with what it's like to be in or near a hospital. So capitalizing off of that for this movie, I think, is really fun and cool. I mean, one of the things that scared me most growing up was the hospital episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Hospitals are scary.
They're also a mix of scary and hopeful, because it's like you feel like you might be safe, but also you might die. So it's like this duality of two, finally safe or you might die. I feel like hospitals bring this automatic, you know, tension and pressure. And yeah, so I think hospitals are really great. They have this duality that we might feel safe and like we're taken care of, but we also feel scared. Like, people die here and this place is like death, and the fear of that. So I think going into a hospital it brings up all these emotions for us, and we've all had all those emotions. So automatically it's evoked whenever we see something set in a hospital.
You're seeing a little bit of the Jasification of Michael Myers in this movie already. Like, he is getting more violent. He is upping, as you said, the kill count. He is not taking his time and crawling around like a slinky inky spider. He's just like on the move.
I also, like, you don't know that he's so supernatural in the first one. And then in the second one, it's like, this man is not a human. They really want you to know that. In the first one, yes, it's a
super. No, I feel like he's still a little bit human in Halloween 2. Like, it gets much more.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah.
Down the line, as you know, it gets a little bit more explicit. Yeah, but this one, he's doing some crazy stuff. Like, his super strength is on full display. He's only 21.
Yeah, I was surprised. It's always surprising. 21? Like, he feels so old.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he feels, you know, but yeah.
Which I like, because, you know, he isn't a person. He is just evil. He's the shape.
He is the darkness within all of us.
Yeah, he was a bad therapist.
He wasn't good, but I would love to talk to Dr. Loomis and chat it out.
Yeah, but he's dead.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's a bummer.
Yeah, like IRL.
Yeah, I assumed that. I mean.
And did he die in the movie? I don't think he did, but I could be wrong. Please don't leave a negative review. I don't know. So here's an interesting thing that is also very divisive, which is the introduction of the sibling plot line. So seeing or learning that Michael is in fact like related to Laurie, and that he's, you know, after sort of eliminating his own bloodline, Samhain written in blood on the wall, a lot of stuff going on. It's such a huge part of the lore in the fandom that, like, you know, I think for a long time was taken quite seriously, and then was sort of retconned completely in the David Gordon Green movies. I forget exactly what happened with him in H2O, if he was still siblings or not. I'm not sure.
Yes.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. But yeah, so this is something that I think a lot of people really liked, but also something that a lot of people feel like overcomplicated this mythology and sort of took it down a messier, less interesting path than just the idea of a babysitter stalker.
That's my feeling about it. I actually never thought the sister element was needed. I think it felt, yeah, it felt sort of put in, like overcomplicated. Like, I just like, he's evil, he's killing, you know, this innocence, which is like the babysitter. Like, I just think it needs to be that. And like, Lori got away and he wants to kill Lori because she got away. You know, it doesn't need to be bloodline, but maybe that's just me. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk about the kills in this movie because there's some really good ones. So the opening, the version that we watched has the opening segment with young Annie. And it starts with, I'm sorry, everybody, but like an older couple, and you're worried that they're going to be murdered by Michael. But instead, he just takes their knife and leaves a little bit of blood. And then he moves on to another young sort of teen. And she's the one that was on the phone with her friend, learning that, you know, the murders occurred just down the street from her, not sure what happened to the culprit. And while she's on the phone, she gets cut up in the throat, and it's unpleasant.
So scary.
So I would say this is like the most in line with the heart of the series that, you know, this film ever gets to. It's the most Halloween 1978 in terms of scares and vibes and even violence, because you don't see the direct implications completely. But
it also is so that fear that everyone has, you know, when you're like, oh my god, there's a shooting right down my street, you know, down the street from me, and that doesn't, usually nothing comes from that, but that something would then come from that and it would come to your house.
Yeah,
there's some, oh, that's like a fear we all have. And I love that they evoked that in this beginning, because then you're like, oh right, we're in this small town, nobody's safe.
Would you say it's one of the scarier kills in the film?
To me, it's the scariest kill in the film, I think.
Uh-huh.
There are grosser, worse ones, but I think this is the one that kind of gets me in the way that that I like. Yeah,
I would agree. You know, it really feels like this could have been an outtake from the first film.
Yes, absolutely.
So after her death, we do get the death of Ben Kramer, like the teenager dressed up as Michael Myers that burns to death. But I think we can surpass him and talk about the security guard who gets it. I believe in my memory, he got it in the back of the head with the front of the hammer. But rewatching it, it does seem like I got that backwards.
And
oh, right.
The security guard.
Yeah. So in my memory, you got to, but you know, in actuality, yes, it's the front of the head with the back of the hammer. Both bad options.
I think front of the head, back of the hammer is grosser.
Because it's more of a crush than it is a impale?
It's more of an impale, because the back of a hammer is like...
Oh, I see. The way that it happened is grosser. Yeah,
it's grosser, yeah.
But I feel like the other way might actually be more painful.
It's hard to know.
You know what? We should find out.
Which would be more painful? I think that's a really hard thing to figure out.
No, it's not.
Oh, we're going to do it?
You're going to do it? You know, but in the meantime, yeah, that death was uncomfortable. There's the hot young couple who decide to take a little hot tub together, a little hot tub action. I remember this death really messing with my head as a kid. You know, when you get that psychosexual fantasy a little bit sort of crosswired with terrifying violence as a kid, that like it can really get to you.
It's like the Jean Lajoie song.
Why would you have to call out everything that I do, you know? Let it just be my own beautiful thought. Hey, not a good guy.
No.
Actually, what would you say? You say evil doesn't exist.
I don't
only
believe in evil.
Trauma.
He's severely traumatized. I don't believe in evil. That being said, he's not a person, so maybe it's different.
Another standout is, I always thought it was a needle to the eyeball because I was always too scared to look directly. But yeah, this time I took a braver observation And it wasn't quite a needle to the eye. What was going on here?
It was a needle directly in the brain. I don't know what the liquid was, but it was a needle directly in the brain.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The syringe filled them up. So something got shot into the brain. Michael did not know what liquid that was either.
I don't think he knew. He's not a scientist.
That person just becomes like a superhuman, like super brain.
All of a sudden they're like, whoa,
I know how to defeat you.
Yeah.
Well, and then I could be wrong, but I feel like the most iconic death in this film would be when the nurse is stabbed in the back with a tiny little scalpel, lifted to high heaven, and dies. What do you think about that one?
It wouldn't work. It's unrealistic, but boy, was it beautiful.
Yeah.
It's just a great scene. It's a great death while Laurie's watching. It's like, it's perfect. Also very, you know, Halloween. It gives all those vibes. But yeah, I mean, like, it's not that scary because it's not very logical. And you know, I love logic in horror movies, which is an annoying thing about me.
Think there's a single world where someone with superhuman strength could achieve that.
I just don't know that they would die. Maybe you're right. Maybe I don't know.
I know. I hate when people get like scraped with a knife and just immediately die.
It would be more deathy if dragged down her body and she felt like, you know what I mean? But we wouldn't get that amazing shoe moment.
So I would say that those are my favorite deaths in the film. Michael Myers not included. Some pretty cool explosions. We also touch a little bit on like the mystical lore of Michael Myers for the first time in this film. We get a little bit of background on Samhain. This is movies and movies before we touch into the Thorn cult of it all. So as someone who's maybe less versed in the later chapters of the Halloween movies, how did the Samhain lore stuff sort of rub you?
I liked it. I'm fine with that. I love Halloween history. I love a reason, especially Michael is one that I'm sometimes like, why is he just, ooh, it's Celtic, you know, like I'm kind of into it.
I agree. Even though it may be a little bit half-assed.
Absolutely. And I think there were party, like they're just added in and you're like, what?
How were the performances?
I mean, Laurie's amazing. Jamie Lee Curtis is a god, but that wig is a nightmare, but
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Did you feel like, if you were a kid, you would have clocked it? Or do you think it's because our post-Drag Race?
No, it's because of, yeah, I think post-Drag Race, post also like being a femme-presenting woman, like it's so clearly not hair. But I think as a kid, no, you don't notice at all.
You're just, I think, like, I did, honestly.
Oh, really?
I don't know if I knew it was a wig, but I knew something was not right.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But I would say as a kid, when I was stupid, young, and didn't know better, that I preferred Halloween 2 to Halloween 1.
Yeah, I get it. I think Halloween 2, again, it's more action-packed.
Yeah, it's better. It's like more kid. I don't think you can really, or I think a lot of people have a harder time really getting, grasping, and understanding the power of the first film because it's so subtle and quiet and beautiful. You know, it's not Marvel nonsense at all, which the second one has a little bit of.
There's only three deaths, I think, in the first one. Am I
something right? Like
three,
that.
Three or four. And sorry, people don't get mad in line. Slasher movies now are like crazy numbers. You know, on a first kill alone, you might get five. So,
And remember, it was one of the first of its kind, too. So, yeah. The algorithm was not.
Yeah, it wasn't set. So, you know, the second film having way more kills makes it, you know, in some way, if I was a kid, I would have been more scared of this one.
Well, I'm scared of you.
I'm not scared of anything.
I'm big and you're small.
You're wrong. Yeah.
Okay, well, I would say that sums up my feelings, my emotions, my connections with Halloween 2. How about you?
Yeah, let's talk about what it could have been.
Well, before we do that, I just kind of want to tiptoe through the tulips for a quick second. And for like three literal seconds, talk about the other Halloween 2, Rob Zombie's Halloween 2. From 2009. Jules, have you seen this movie?
I did not see either Rob Zombie films.
Why?
I don't love torture type movies. Okay. I don't love that kind of genre of horror. And so, you know, I've seen House of a Thousand Corpses. I've seen Devil Rejects. And they're just not for me. So I wasn't... I didn't want his versions of Halloween to kind of ruin my Halloween moments. So I didn't see them.
Yeah, I think that a lot of fans would probably say that you made the right choice. Rob Zombie, in my opinion, is someone who oscillates between making quite fun and good spooky nonsense to someone that makes complete garbage. Yeah. And I think these Halloween movies are sort of leaning more towards the negative end of the spectrum. Although there was a bit of a renaissance for Halloween 2 online maybe a few years ago, where people were starting to appreciate it a little bit more and more. And if you know me, then you know I was always a disruptor, and I was always someone ringing the bell saying Halloween 2 was better than Halloween 1 in terms of the Rob Zombie movies. Now, I did usually just say it to get a rise out of people, but yeah, I think a part of me always did believe that there's some truth to it. There's a fan out there that made like a super cut or a super edit where they remove all of Michael Myers's like mother in a white dress and the white horse segments out and just sort of made it more, you know, make a little bit more sense. And I could see that actually being a fun film. I like what they did with the homage to hospital horror in that movie. I think it's pretty scary and kind of dreamy. So I don't think Halloween 2, the second Halloween 2, is necessarily worth being written off completely, but it is, of course, in no way in the realm of this film.
Yeah. I can't imagine, you know, Rob Zombie having a similar soft touch that John Carpenter had.
So, as you were mentioning, the reason that we're here today is to dig into the alternative history of Halloween 2, when Halloween 2 was nearly set in a high-rise apartment complex. Jules, do you think you'd be okay if I gave a bit of a seminar of what could have been?
I would love to be part of the seminar.
Okay, get your notebook out. So I think it dates back to Fangoria number 7. And there was a note in that one that John Carpenter and Deborah Hill were indeed starting to develop Halloween 2, although that the plot that they were discussing in this magazine segment was nothing like what we would eventually get with the film. It described Halloween 2 as being set, taking place like quite a bit of time after the events of the original, and so as obviously what we got, it takes place immediately after the events of the original. So they were going to sort of go in the opposite direction, have it take place further down the line with Laurie Strode, who would be coming back. But now she's like hyper safety conscious, like paranoid, very cautious. And she's living now in a high rise apartment complex with a very sort of high tech and, you know, high-paid security setup. This is, I guess, sort of like what we're seeing with Laurie Strode later on in Halloween 2018, where she, like, you know, lives in a booby-trapped, you know, hut in the woods, but this is sort of taking that in a little classier, upward, mobile direction. Yeah, so we were going to get a film about Laurie Strode. She's now super, super nervous, super, super paranoid, living in this high-tech, high-rise apartment complex to make sure she's as safe as she can possibly be. At that time, Deborah Hill also confirmed that this was going to be the idea for the next film, and they were also toying with other ways of getting Michael Myers back in, but they were thinking really strongly about shooting this in 3D. Of course, eventually, we were going to see another failed Halloween 3D film with Patrick Lussier and Todd Farmer concocting Halloween 3D, and you could hear our episode about that if you look back into our feed. I think it would have been the sequel to the Rob Zombie films, actually, that never happened. But Halloween 2 was also potentially being developed as a 3D project. It was definitely reported that we would get Loomis returning. Donald Pleasance would be reprising his role. And I do believe Laurie Strode would be reprised as well by Jamie Lee Curtis. Now, I think something in the article that is of note is that no one was clear if Dr. Loomis was actually himself going to be living in the apartment complex, or if he was just going to sort of show up in order to save our hero. Something that's, I think, really important to discuss is the similarities between this concept for a Halloween film and another film that John Carpenter created, I think, in the late 1970s. So he created a television horror movie, so it didn't go to theaters, titled Someone's Watching Me, which I think gets a lot of comparisons to Rear Window. And it was about this woman who is stalked by, you know, a madman in a high-rise apartment complex. So I don't know what you think, Jules, but it definitely sounds to me like there was going to be an evolution of that idea.
Yeah. They yeah. sound very similar.
They do. Another very interesting tidbit was, you know, who was going to direct Halloween 2? Now, we know that Rick Rosenthal eventually did take on the mantle of director for the sequel that was, in fact, made. But there was another person who was approached to potentially take on the helm. And that was... We talked about Deborah Hill a few times. She's sort of this unsung hero in the world of Halloween. She wrote and produced on those first two films, and a lot of people believe she had a lot to do with why they came out the way they did, why they had sort of teenage girl naturalism in the way that really helped make the film succeed. And I think, for, you know, obvious reasons, history has sort of forgotten about her and has really celebrated John Carpenter, who deserves every celebration he gets, but I think Deborah Hill deserves more. But she was actually asked to direct Halloween 2 when we knew that John Carpenter sort of had passed it up for other reasons. So in Fangoria number 15, she expanded on why she didn't agree to this. So she said, "I didn't really want to start with a sequel to a John Carpenter film. I'd like to start with an original." Yeah, and I think also the editor from the first film, Tommy Lee Wallace, was approached by John Carpenter and Hill to direct. He didn't do it, but he would go on to direct Halloween Part 3. So, a couple of interesting things going on here. We have another contained space, this time a high-rise apartment complex. We have sort of this evolution of another John Carpenter slasher stalker film, Someone's Watching Me. And we have a few different kind of interesting people approached to sort of take on the mantle of director, including Deborah Hill and Tommy Lee Wallace. So I guess, Jules, what do you think of this? Do you think that this would have worked as well as a hospital setting?
I love the idea of it being an apartment complex. I really liked the Laurie Strode being paranoid and being really safety focused in the newer Halloween movies as a something less tight about it. Less you know, when we think about urban cities, that's where people think, oh, that they're dangerous anyways. But suburban horror is more like, ooh, this is where bad things shouldn't happen.
Yeah, but it's also like where it's quiet and alone.
Yeah,
like other kinds of bad things happen in a city or an urban setting, but you're never far away from being able to call for help or someone witnessing it or something like that. But if you encounter the wrong person in the middle of nowhere, you're kind of shit out of luck.
Totally.
Which I love. I grew up in a pretty spooky high-rise apartment complex, and I think it kind of like left quite an impression on me creatively over the years. Do you remember that place at all?
I do. I totally remember that place.
Do you want to describe it?
It was actually a beautiful apartment.
Okay.
It was big. It was large. I mean, were the hallways scary? All apartments.
Yeah, yeah. I don't mean by the apartment itself, but like, what was like the property like?
I mean, yeah. I mean, it was North York, Toronto, which I don't know if people know this because they're listening from all over, but it's sort of suburby. But it's not. It's weird. And so
yeah.
The hallways were spooky and gray and weird, and you know, like you always, it's sort of like being in an elevator. Like, it's unsettling. You don't feel relaxed and calm until you get into a unit, and then it's like, whew, you're okay. There's something sort of like you want to run through it to get to the safety.
I mean, we're saying it again, it's a liminal horror.
It's liminal, man. And I think the word's overused, but it is what it is, you know?
It is what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always kind of was fascinated by the spookiness of like a kind of an older apartment building, and I could definitely see a horror movie really succeeding in a high-rise setting. Do you remember when I was in like, I don't know, my first year of like grad program, where I had an idea for a high-rise horror movie? Okay, so I had this concept that I wanted to do with my friends in school called Stairwell, where a bunch of young people, like, they get home after like a long night partying and the elevator is out, so they're forced to take the stairs up like 15 flights, and then they sort of realize that someone has locked them in the stairwell, so they can go up and they can go down, but that's all they've got, and they get stalked sort of down one by one by the killers.
This. Yeah. Patent pending. Don't just give this away for free.
I know, it's not bad. Stairwell. And then I think one of the floors would be open, then they would like have access to spooky ookies. But
it's super scary. I mean, the stairway in apartment buildings are so scary. I was in a low rise. I lived in a low rise for a little while, and there was no elevator. It was just stairways, and it was scary. And when you pass by people, like, we all look down. Like, it's a weird feeling.
Yeah, it's unpleasant, unfriendly, and unsanitary.
It is unsanitary.
Do you think that there's a world where maybe we'll ever get to see a Halloween film in a high-rise setting?
I would love that. But maybe I'm wrong. I mean, I'm not a creative type. I would go. I would watch it. But there's something about the confined space of it that I don't think people would want to do. But what do you think?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think this franchise is the right one. But as you were saying earlier with Evil Dead Rise, like, that's perfect.
It was
like,
great.
That's a great one. Although, you know, everyone, I think I would have argued the same thing, that Evil Dead belongs in the woods, and that's the vibe, just like I'm arguing that now with the suburbs and Halloween. And, you know, maybe there's something there if you just do it right.
But I think, you know, where Evil Dead Rise really worked was like how they were all trapped in their cabin. Now they're all trapped on the floor. So I think that was still, they were able to make it small without, I don't know, but maybe I'm just rambling now.
What's another like contained setting that a Halloween movie could benefit from?
That's a great question. A contained setting. Well, like, I mean, there's like a school or like,
which they kind of did with Halloween H2O.
Oh, that's true. They did do that. Yeah, like cabins are so that, like, island, like, there's, you know, whenever it's like you can't get out.
You like I still know what you did last summer.
Yeah. That movie did not hold up. That was
no, but I like it.
I was so excited. We rewatched it in the theaters recently. Uh-huh. And it wasn't as good as I remembered it being.
No, but grateful for Sharna. I don't know if there's like a hospital they've done, that would be great. A high rise would be cool. Maybe like a shopping mall.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe like a shopping mall shut down after dark, or like a department store shut down after dark, or like one of those like airport hotels, like those liminal kind of like salmon painted hotels.
Yeah.
Like a Best Western or something that's like snowed in.
Well, it's like a motel. That's Right? Like I think what's different about a shopping mall is there's something more, I don't know, like it's not as like close to home or something. It's not as lived
intimate.
So it's, for some reason, that's less scary for me. You know, being trapped in a mall absolutely has its own thing, and there's like been lots of cool horror movies and slasher movies in that, but I don't think it has that same evoking power as a thing like an apartment complex or a hospital or a cabin, right? Mm-hmm. which is this kind of like the safety mixed with the danger, which I think is better in those other places, whereas a mall is not as much.
There, like another canceled Halloween movie, Halloween Retribution, had a large section of it taking place in an abandoned, like, asylum.
Oh, yeah.
I think that'd be kind of fun.
Yeah, I mean, that's always scary and fun. I mean, I don't love the horrification of people with mental illness, but I won't get into that.
That's well, then fine. You shouldn't like this franchise.
I know. Well, that's why I said Dr. Loomis is the worst.
Oh, yeah.
But again, I tell myself that Michael is not human. So no. It's not that he has a mental illness. It's that he is like not a human entity. He is evil incarnate.
He is evil incarnate. And on that note, Jules, thank you for joining me on this episode. It was so fun. Where can people find you on the internet? What are you up to?
Yeah, I mean, you can find me if you want to. I'm at Jules Rules Your World on Instagram, or I also host Trivia, Trivial Bitch, but it's all in Toronto. I don't know if you want to follow me, but you can find me.
Wow.
But I'm also, a Toronto-based counselor, so you can find me on Psychology Today.
I love that. Well, thank you, Jules. Thank you so much for listening to Development Hell. If you enjoy this podcast, then please do us a major favor of leaving us 5 stars and writing a positive review. It really makes all the difference in the world. We'll see you next week with a brand new episode of Development Hell.
Thank you for listening to the Dread Podcast Network.